The Rebbe, in his footnotes on Tanya, writes on this piece, Loshen Nishmas. Why does he add it? Because he wants to explain why the Alter Rebbe is using these numbers. It's a Nishmas already. In the Tefillah of Nishmas, we say on Shabbos, the Kolboy writes, by the way, that Shimon ben Shattach authored it. But it originates in Sifri, I think in Parshas Vaschana. And it's an early creation. So the Alter Rebbe uses these numbers. But the point is that just as one doesn't have a value relative to infinity, a million has no value relative to it, because it's not a composite of limited numbers. The highest number, when you reach the highest number, you didn't begin to grasp the reality of infinity. It begins in another realm. When you're dealing with a million or a trillion or a zillion, you have one and two, you become closer, and three, you reach closer, and four, you're closer, and five, you're closer. And that means even one has a value. But infinity, one and ten and a million and a zillion, you're not reaching anywhere. The reality begins somewhere else. The Alter Rebbe says, Kalei Mamash Chashivi. One second. It is a Harim Uetas. Just like numbers are numbers. I said, number one exists. It exists. Relative to the infinity, it has no value. It doesn't have an estimation. New, so what do you want to say?
You could describe it to a mamish. One, you would say it has no relation. But could you call it very small?
You say you wouldn't say very small. So why does he say Ara Muetis? You want to know why he says she Ara Muetis Moi? The numbers, you wouldn't say one is very small. It doesn't have a relationship. It doesn't exist in its world. It doesn't have any value. You want to know why here he says Arum Uetis Moi? The numbers, you wouldn't say it's a very small number. One is small. It's a good question. It's a good question, and we'll get to it in the future of this chapter. Yes. You're saying that in the pre-Big Bang universe, mathematics doesn't work. Numbers can't reach that realm.
Yeah.
Can't deal with that realm.
And that's why scientists themselves admit that limitation.
So the bottom line is that you can recognize in the previous data terminology, you can recognize the million in the one. Multiply it a million times and you have a million. So the one reflects the million. You cannot recognize the properties of infinity within the finite. Multiply it as many times as you wish, and you have not begun to touch the infinite. You cannot recognize its properties in the finite. It's of a different reality altogether. So the Alter Rebbe concludes, V'kacha mamish, so mamish, indeed, really so, hipchinas. Here is the word again. Hipchinas ha'arimu etezu is the utterly insignificant quality of this minute illumination. After the tzimtzum, after the contraction, hamislabeshes ba'olam esalyonim v'tachtonim, which manifests itself in the higher and lower worlds. In order to provide them with sustenance and life, when you compare this minute illumination with the quality of the hidden and the concealed light, that is of an infinite order, just as the value that exists in numbers 1 or 1 million or 1 trillion relative to an into infinity, and we said it's actually utterly insignificant and valueless, so is the relationship of this post-Tzimtzum light when compared with the quality of the hidden and concealed light that is Ein Sof, that is endless. You cannot recognize the properties of the original light in the contracted light. It's of a different nature altogether. It's not that the original light was diluted and the post-Tzimtzum light is one millionth of it, one trillionth of it, one zillionth of it. It's a different reality. The post-Tzimtzum light doesn't make up even an infinitesimal of the previous pre-Tzimtzum light. And it is only through the metamorphosis of the original light that the post-Tzimtzum light can create, stimulate, impact, invigorate, and animate, and vivify limited, defined, self-conscious creatures. So for us to be fallible, finite, flawed, Hashem needed, so to speak, to curtail His light, to limit His self-expression, in a sense to deny Himself. And the new light is that which can, in a conscious fashion, pervade and produce existence as we know it. Now here, in the final moments, I want to touch on one point. This idea that Alter Rebbe presented here in Tanya is a revolutionary idea. And it's a revolutionary idea that finds its nucleus, its elah, the antecedent of this idea, although the Alter Rebbe developed it into a mansion, but it's to be attributed to one of the chidushim, to one of the new concepts that originated in the Kabbalistic system of the Arizal, of Rabbeinu Yitzchak Luria, versus the entire Kabbalistic literature that existed before the Arizal. And since this is extremely crucial to understand in order to appreciate Alter Rebbe's contribution in this and in the following chapter, I want to discuss this for a few moments. Chassidus, particularly Chassidus Chabad, discusses the fact that the Arizal is the one who was Mechadesh. The Arizal is the one who revealed to us the doctrine of Tzimtzum, which was unknown till the Arizal's days. The Arizal passed away, as you know, in the year Shin Lamed Beis, 1572, in Tzvas. The Arizal was born in Yerushalayim. He was orphaned at a young age from his father, and his mother took him down to Egypt, where he was raised by his uncle and married there, lived there for most of his life near the Nile River in isolation, and then made Aliyah to Tzvas and lived there only for 2 years. He died in the age of 38, some people say 36. But during those 2 years, he taught his entire Kabbalistic system. Now, right when he came, he still learned at the feet of the great renowned Kabbalist of his time, considered the greatest of his time, the Ramak, Reb Moshe Kardavero, who lived in Tzvas. The Ramak was an extraordinary Kabbalist and Torah scholar, one of the greatest of his generation. He was a student of the Beis Yosef, Reb Yosef Karo, who lived there. And in Kabbalah, he was a student of his brother-in-law, Reb Shlomo Alkabetz, who wrote the L'chadoidi Likras Kala. Reb Moshe Kardavero, his unique contribution was, he compiled the entire Kabbalistic literature that existed till his day, and he systemized it and organized it in an integrated way, in an integrated fashion. His monumental work was Pardes Rimonim, the Orchard of Pomegranates, divided into portals, whether it's Shar HaAtzilus, Shar Mohus VaHanhaga, Shar Im HaKeser Ein Sof. He took every single subject and he compiled all of the ideas and concepts that existed in Kabbalah till his days and organized it in a very systematic fashion and manner and presented it on a golden platter. The Arizal learned by his at his feet originally, but the Ramak died the year the Arizal came. The year Shin Lamed, 1570, the Ramak died at the age of 48. In fact, we have recorded the Arizal's eulogy. In his during the funeral, the Arizal eulogized him with the pasuk that says, "V'chiyeh ve'ish chet mishpat maves v'humas v'salisa isayaletz." If a person will sin in a way that he will warrant the death penalty, so after the death he was hung, but you weren't allowed to allow the body to stay there overnight. As the famous Rashi from the Chazal say that if the king has a twin brother and the twin brother is killed and hung, it's a humiliation for the king. People will say the king is hanging and a human being was created, B'Tselem Elokim, in the image of Hashem. It's humiliating Hashem himself for a person to be humiliated in that fashion. So there are Arizal interpreted it from a mystical perspective. If you'll see a person, he's missing. Chet means a sin. Chet in Hebrew also means a void, a lack. Chet means a chisarin. In Tanakh we have ani uvni shloim chatoyim. We're going to be lacking. If you'll see in a person a chet, he's lacking mishpat mavis. He's lacking the justification to die. There's no sin in him that can justify the reason that he died. He's totally pure. He's unblemished. V'humas, and he still dies. V'salisa isayaletz. You have to attribute his death to the sin of Eitz Hadas. The only justification for his passing was that Adam and Chav ate from the tree of knowledge, and as a result of that, death was introduced into the world. So this is how he eulogized Reb Moshe Cordovero. Once Reb Moshe Cordovero passed away, a little while later, the Arizal began to reveal his Kabbalistic teachings, and he revolutionized Kabbalah. And his chief disciple was Reb Chaim Vital, who transcribed all of the Arizal's teachings that we have them today. It's unbelievable what the Arizal taught in 2 years. I mean, simply mind-staggering. Volumes upon volumes upon volumes. In Chassidus Chabad, there's an expression, it's even really in previous Kabbalistic books, Haramak lo yada me'inyin ha-tzimtzum. Reb Moshe Cordovero was unaware of the doctrine of tzimtzum. The first one who discusses tzimtzum is the Arizal. He discusses this in the beginning of his books, Eitz Chaim, Mevoy Sha'arim, and Neitzris Chaim at length, transcribed by Reb Chaim Vital. But it's intimated in the Zohar. You can find allusions to it in the Zohar, but it was not revealed. The Arizal is the one who revealed it. Not to get too confused, but I just want we should have an appreciation of what's going on here a little bit. I mentioned that Ramak's most important work is Pardes Rimonim. He authored also a 16-volume commentary on the Zohar called Or Yakar. He authored books. One book I know is studied in Torah Vadas even. It's called Taimer Dvoira. That's a Musar book. So it's studied by, it's very common. He authored a book called Or Nerav, Tefillah L'Moshe on Davening. Or Nerav was translated, right? I saw that. Which is a Kabbalistic work. The Pardes Rimonim has a commentary on it. The commentary was authored by a Kabbalist whose name was Rabbi Menachem Azariah Afanu. His name is known in the Kabbalistic literature as the Rameh Mipanu, a city in Italy. And he authored, again, many works. His most famous work is Asara Mamoris. He also has a work on Halacha, on Gemara, it's called Alfasi Zuta. In any case, he has a commentary on the Paradis that's called Pelach HaRimoy. This is the orchard of pomegranates, and this is the Pelach of the pomegranate. The Pelach is the, what is it called? Huh? Stalk of the pomegranate. Look it up. Pelach HaRimon is divided into portals, like Paradis is divided into portals. One of the portals in both of them is called Im Ha'Ein Sof Hu HaKeser. Keser is the highest sphera, the highest of the divine emanations, the divine attributes. Keser, the crown, then comes Chachma, Bina, and so forth. Chesed, Gvura, Tiferes, etc. The question is, if when the Kabbalah talks about Ein Sof, if it's referring to Keser. Some Kabbalists said yes. The Ramak criticizes it very severely, and he says, by no means are you to identify Keser with Ein Sof. The Ein Sof is Hashem himself that transcends Keser. And the Reb Menachem Azariah and Pelach HaRimon in that portal in Shaar Gimel, Perek Aleph, quotes the Ramak from another book of the Ramak I didn't mention before called Elima, which is another Kabbalistic work of the Ramak taken from the scene in Parshas Beshalach where the Jews discover the wellspring of water, the 70 wellsprings with the date trees, and they call that city Elim, Vayavoyu Elima, and that book is also divided into wells and into date trees. In the book Elima, Moshe Cardavero writes, and I want to quote him. He says, even though you can discover a kinship, a kiruv, a closeness between Keser and the Ein Sof, because it is b'choy ka'olu li'hiskarev li'ilasoi, the effect, the olul, has a kinship with its ilo, with its antecedent, with its cause. Mikoma kaim yichuyov hevdel atzum verav. There is nonetheless an intense and powerful gulf, disparity between them. Kemerchak sheyesh bein ha'olul harishoin v'ha'ila hakduma behechlet. You have to appreciate it in the terms of the distance that exists, not between a regular cause and effect, but rather between the first effect and the original primary cause, which is an awesome, titanic disparity and difference between the first effect and the first original cause. He says, "Atche yitzdak loymar," till it is justified to say, "Sheirachik." Mashahaya bein hakeser ve'ein sof harbe yoyser mi mashahaya beinenu hanimtsayim hasichlim bein hakeser ha'elyon. There is a greater distance between keser, the highest divine spiritual emanation, and the ein sof, Hashem himself, greater than the distance between us, mortal human beings of flesh and blood, and the highest spiritual attribute of keser. One second. But what about the distance between us and Ein Sof is greater than the distance between Keser and Ein Sof? He says just that the distance between Keser and Ein Sof is far greater than the distance between us and Keser. But what about the difference between us and Ein Sof? He doesn't say that Keser and Asiyah, the highest spiritual attribute, and the lowly physical world are identical in the presence of Ein Sof, relative to Ein Sof. He doesn't say that. So I'll say as follows. The distance between Keser, which is totally divine, divinely inspired and spiritual and abstract and subtle and sublime and transcendental. I'll say, the difference between Keser and Hashem is further than the distance between Keser and the pebble in my backyard. But the pebble in my backyard is more remote from Ein Sof than Keser is from Ein Sof. this is how Chabad Chassidus sees the meaning behind the words of the Ramak and Elima quoted in Pelach HaRimon by Rabbi Nachum Azariah Afano. According to the Arizal, however, according to the Kabbalah of the Arizal, Keser and the pebble in your backyard are identical relative to Ein Sof, and the truth is relative to Oyer Ein Sof, relative even to Oyer Ein Sof. And this is because, in the words of the fifth Lubavitcher Rebbe, the Rebbe Rashab, in his discourses, 1905, 1898, Haramak Zal Layoda Meinyan Hatzimtzum. The Ramak defines the process of creation ultimately as Ilova Olul. He defines Keser as being the Olul of the Ein Sof. Now, obviously, you have to detach it from the regular understanding of Ilova Olul as the Ramak himself does. But since ultimately you're dealing with Ilova Olul, so Keser is higher in the chain. And the rock in my backyard is lower in the chain. And the speck of dust is lower in the chain. True. The first rung of the chain, the highest rung of the chain, is closer to the lowest rung of the chain, closer than the distance between the beginning of the chain and its cause. But since ultimately you're calling it an Ilova Olul, somewhere, somehow you're defining even the Ein Sof as the cause of the chain, as the antecedent, so therefore the properties of Keser reflect more the Ein Sof than the properties of the physical world. No. What are you saying that what? You're answering the question? His question is, the Ramak didn't believe in Yesh Me'ayin. The Ramak didn't accept the doctrine that the world was created something from nothing. So what makes it an Ilah?
So I was trying to answer that obviously we have to distinguish between cause and effect, an effect or a necessary effect or an unnecessary effect.
So you're saying that Yesh Me'ayin here is the Ilah is called the Ayin, but it's not a necessary effect, it's not an intrinsic effect, it's not an inevitable effect. You're saying it's an effect made by choice.
Perhaps.
A voluntary effect. That the primary cause is beyond. Okay, this is a heavy question you're asking. It's a good question, but let's put it on hold for now. So, as remote and transcendent the Ein Sof is from the Keser, and obviously it is, but nonetheless, Keser still expresses it more than Asiya expresses it, than physicality expresses it. Because he defines it again in terms of Ilah v'Alul. And the higher Alul is closer to the Ilah and is more expressive of the Ilah than the lower Alul. The Arizal taught that there was a Tzimtzum. And in the Arizal's words, the Tzimtzum is not that he diminished his light. Silek oiroi are the Arizal's words. He removed his light. He didn't diminish it, dilute it, weaken its intensity, present a 1 millionth piece of it, or 1 trillionth piece of it. He removed his light, and the post-Tzimtzum light is of another reality. It's of another essence. The Arizal taught that in order that the highest world should be produced, Hashem had to deny His presence. He had to deny Himself. And therefore, from the Arizal's point of view, according to what the Arizal revealed to us in Kabbalah, relative to Eir Ein Sof, the level of Keser, or the highest sublime spiritual level of post-Tzimtzum, and the stone in your backyard are identical. Because even the highest level was produced only after a Tzimtzum experience through which the original light had to be suspended, had to be removed, so to speak, had to be totally obscured and curtailed. And even the highest level is of a new product, of a new reality, that in the presence of the new, of the original life, is keloi mamish chasivi, chasivi as though it's nothing, and therefore the highest spirituality and the lowest physicality is identical relative to the Ein Sof.
Isn't that like you say, it's like a light, and light is there, and you lower the shade, in other words, you're obscuring the light from coming in through the window, but it's still the same light, it's just as intense. Only it's being, the shade is kind of, in a sense, limiting the light from coming through. Is that what you're saying, Rabbi, in a way?
I think there was, you said the difference between lowering the shade and making just a smaller hole. Making the hole very small. So that
right.
If you have just a hole in the shade, they're very small, it's the actual light is coming in. That is not Simpson.
No,
totally
in Lamed Ches, that was Tzimtzum. Tzimtzum was when you perforate when you put a small hole into the wall, so just a diminished part of the light comes in, but it's the original light. Hester is when there's a veil, there's a curtain that changes the quality of the light. That's Hester.
Yeah, but here he's using that as
Tzimtzum. I told you, here he joins the two forces. But the Tzimtzum here is even greater than that Tzimtzum. It's even greater than the curtain, Simpson.
I'm not saying that the light is diminished. It's still there. It's simply, it's like a curtain over. That's the way out.
It's that and even more powerful. We'll see.
You can't diminish Hashem or the Ein Sof. It's still God, but there's like a shade over it or a veil in a way.
Yeah, that's for sure. The term used in Kabbalah and Chassidus for what you're describing, the light that comes through a curtain, is parsa. Parsa is the Aramaic term for the Hebrew word masach, which means a curtain, a veil, a forehang. Here we're talking about a deeper concept. It's very late. Let me just finish here the point. And this will begin to answer your question. The Ramak didn't believe the world is yesh mayayin, something from nothing. The real argument between the Ramak and the Arizal, if we want to apply it to ourselves, is as follows. Does creation constitute an act of self-expression or of self-forgetfulness? For Ramak, like for all scholars, and for the entire Torah literature till the Arizal, creation was perceived as an act of divine self-expression. Similar, though not exactly, to an artist who creates an extraordinary painting, and that painting expresses his creative talents and his gifts. Or a writer through his novel. Or a musician through his melody, and so on and so forth. Hashem expressed Himself, His power, His identity, so to speak, in the creation of the world. yesh meyayin, something from nothing, in the sense that the world did not exist before Hashem created it. It's not an inevitable effect. It's not muchrach. It's not a necessary effect. The world is not intrinsic to his existence. It's not kadmoin. It's not primordial as he. But ultimately it expresses him. For the Arizal, creation was an act of self-forgetfulness, self-suspension, you might say self-denial. He had to forget his presence. There had to be a tzimtzum, even in his light, in his emanation, for worldliness, for the world to emerge. The implications of this are very powerful, and are many implications. One major implication is, becoming the most spiritual and transcendental person you can become, do you come closer to the Ein Sof or to the Eir Ein Sof? No. Keser is not a drop closer than the physicality the physicality of our earth. And thus, what Arizal and Chassidus, Chabad, based on the Arizal, learned from this was that sometimes through the physical mitzvah, through the physical tefillin, or the physical nickel, or the physical candle, or the physical wool, you can connect with the essence of Hashem and with the Eir Ein Sof, just like through the deepest transcendence, and sometimes even more than through the deepest transcendence. Keser is not any closer. But the implications that Alter Rebbe learns from this in this chapter is as follows. There's somebody who loves you, right? There's somebody who cares for you. There's somebody who will do you a favor whenever you need it. And that's called a real relationship. But then there's somebody, and not all of us have this in our life, and it's a gift when you have somebody like this in your life. Somebody who not only loves you and cares for you, somebody who will deny his existence for your sake. What's the difference? Kamayim haponim laponim kein leiv ha'adam la'adam. Just like water reflects the face you show it back to you, so the emotion you show me, you get back from me. Just one second. I'll finish right now. This class also needs a tzimtzum. I'll finish with the story.
Okay.
Your feelings towards me are automatically reflected in my feelings towards you. When you love me, you care for me. I love you and I care for you. When you deny yourself from me, then I'm ready to deny myself for you. So the Alter Rebbe says, in order to have a relationship with us, Hashem denied himself for us. He suspended himself. He forgot about himself. He removed himself from himself. So the response ought to be that we deny ourselves for him. Yeah. And here is the big implication of the revolution of the Arizal, that the ultimate relationship with Hashem comes through transcendence of self. If I grow and develop my personality and develop my intelligence, I mean, if you'll view, for example, all Jewish literature till the Arizal, take a work like the Rambam and the Guide for the Perplexed. The Rambam will talk how when a person strips himself from the mundaneness of his physical, vulgar attributes, and reaches the pinnacle of chachma, of wisdom, here he begins to reflect divinity. This is all if you understand it in terms of Ilah V'Alel. Chachma, Keser, reflects divinity. Keser is a Kabbalistic term. Chachma is a Jewish philosophical term, so the Rambam uses it. In Arizal, you can excavate yourself to the deepest level, you're not going to find the Ein Sof, because there's a Tzimtzum that creates an endless gulf between the two. It's in self-transcendence where man experiences the Ein Sof. We'll continue to deal with this at length in the following weeks. I'll conclude. It's nice and late. I'll just conclude with a story. I have to admit, it was very difficult to find a story for this. if we're talking about a particular emotion or a psychological streak, there are usually stories that reflect it. So the story that I reminded myself is of a little bit of a different nature. I saw the story be told on two people, on the Alter Rebbe, but I saw that in his book, Sipurei Chasidim, Rabbi Shlomo Yosef Zevin writes the same story and says that it occurred with the Hasidic master, Reb Simcha Binim of Pshischa. But I also saw it said on the Alter Rebbe. The Alter Rebbe was once sitting in his chamber, and a group of Chasidim was sitting in the room outside of the Alter Rebbe's personal chamber office, and a man came to see the Rebbe, a man whom they used to call then a Deitschel. A Deitschel means a German. Not necessarily he was from Germany, but that's when the Haskalah really began to spread in Eastern Europe. The Jewish Enlightenment that created an entire movement of scholars and thinkers that attempted to compromise or dilute or even create a tzimtzum in many ways in many of the fundamentals of Yiddishkeit. It began to take root in Russia and in Poland. And this Jew was dressed that way. The fashion of his garbs, of his clothing, reflected very much the modern style that was common in the emancipated countries and territories. So when they looked at him, they realized, ah, here is an enlightened Jew, and they saw Chassidim and Chassidus as their arch enemy, and Alter Rebbe did have experience with many of them. I mean, there's a whole other story about it, we won't get into it. So they saw him coming to the Alter Rebbe, they began to antagonize him, and they didn't want to let him in. There were some sharp minds there, and they began to deal with him in a sharp fashion. But to their surprise, he reacted in a very humble way. He says, "No, if I can't go in, I'm not going to be able to ask my question." And he went away. He was dressed in a short jacket, so they immediately suspected him of being not such an observant Jew, not such a God-fearing or pious Jew, and they dismissed him and he left. The way he left, left a suspicion in their heart. So one of them went into the Alter Rebbe and told the Alter Rebbe what happened. And they saw that the Alter Rebbe's face grew very seriously and he was extremely perturbed. And he said, "Get it, bring him right back. So they ran out and they found him and they brought him back. And they were so curious by now, so they listened to the conversation. He went into the room, and this was the conversation. He says, "Rebbe, I can enter into a marriage with two women, two different women. I was given the option of either of them. One of them is beautiful. Outstanding, but she doesn't have yichus. As far as her genealogy, she doesn't come from a particularly distinguished lineage. The other one has great yichus. She is genealogically superb and fit, but she's not so beautiful. What should I do? So the Alter Rebbe, engaged in a meditation. He was thinking and thinking for a while. And he lifted his head and he said, Schenkeit is for Schenkeit. Beauty is beauty. You can't underestimate it. Take the beautiful one. And he left the room. So he left the room. So the chassidim were dumbfounded. Well, who is he? What? This is the question he comes to ask the Alter Rebbe. And the Alter Rebbe has to meditate on what should be the answer. And then what's his answer? It seemed extremely inconsistent with what they knew of the Alter Rebbe. So one of the chassidim had the audacity and he said, Rebbe, I apologize, but you have to explain to me what happened. So the Alter Rebbe said, he's a concealed Jew. He wanted to know if he should learn the Kabbalah of the Ramak or the Kabbalah of the Arizal. Kabbalah of the Ramak has yichus. Because the Kabbalah of the Ramak is the literature of the Kabbalah that was passed down from generation to generation to generation, and the Ramak compiled it and developed it. The Kabbalah of the Arizal doesn't have yichus. It was a revelation of that that came through the Arizal. The Arizal was revealed new secrets and mysteries of the Torah according to our tradition. And that's how he was accepted by all Jews, as a man who revealed new dimensions of Jewish mysticism. And I told them, Schenkeit is Schenkeit, but Arizal's Kabbalah has a beauty and a splendor of its own. I told him he should learn the Arizal's Kabbalah. Have a good night and a wonderful week. You have to understand, this is a big revolution of Chassidus. Because Hashem gave us the ability to have dveikus to Torah mitzvahs. Well, first of all, you have to understand. You daven might have already.
No,
you want to daven now, so we'll talk afterwards. First Alul.
Is that told us about like Kesser that comes?
The highest Kesser, the first level of Kesser.
That's not Kesser, that's serious, right? If the word is that Kesser go. I didn't have really the whole idea. Ban Hesis, it's even somehow higher than Atzilus, right? And then you have all the Shiva Midos that exist, and even Atzilus, they exist in a pre-condition in Olam of Ban and Olam of what you know.
The highest level of Kesser. The highest level of Kesser.
Which is weird. Which Olam? Which
The truth is like this. I believe by the Ramak it's Kesser of Atzilus. I believe so.
He didn't know. It's
not Rizal. There's Ban and Ma, but it's expressed in the lower levels, not beyond Atzilus. I'm saying the Ramak, I believe Kesser is referring to Kesser d'Atzilus. I'm almost sure. Kesser of Atzilus he's referring to. Now he says clearly, the Ramam Panu quotes him, that the distance between Kesser and Ein Sof is greater than the distance between Kesser and Asiya. So in other words, Pshat is, but the distance between Asiya and Ein Sof is greater. So Hitaka writes, in his Pardes, there's certain places, there's a shar called Shar HaGvanim, the portal of colors. He writes how the highest levels of Kesser, mishtavim, the, if you want to say, they share certain properties with Ein Sof.
Which kind of is that?
And he says in many areas it's totally remote and distant and you can't even describe it, but this, but again, you're dealing with the first alul that comes from the ilah. And in an ilah and alul, there's a similarity of properties. And the first alul is always closer to the ilah than the second, and certainly than the millionth, and certainly than the billionth.
But that's not true if you hold that it's a difference between finite and infinite. But they were saying
for that Arizal, there was a tzimtzum before keser occurred. Tzimtzum is self-forgetfulness, self-denial. A new reality emerged. It's not he diminished the previous reality and gave you a little part of it, and that continues to diminish and diminish.
Are we saying, is anyone saying that the result is
contradicting something? No. No. There's no contradiction.
I think it's a contradiction. Why can't we have something that totally contradicts? Because according to the result, there's no difference. There's no closeness. No closeness.
Question, yeah. The result doesn't say that.
No.
The
Arizal just talks about these realities.
He's not dealing with terms. I don't think anything he's saying contradicts. It's almost as if you can say it. It's in there.
It's a total.
In the Makar. The expression of Silik Ayre.
The Arizal says Silik Ayre Latzad, yeah?
Before the world.
Haya Ayren Saf Mamale. It's in three places. It's the beginning of Eitz Chaim. That's one sefer. And the beginning of a sefer called Mevoi Sha'arim, and the beginning of a sefer called Eitz Rish Chaim. Each place it's said differently, but the content is more or less the same. Never before. No. The Zohar starts, the beginning of the whole Zohar. Zohar Bereishis, the first words of the Zohar are Bereshur Menusa de Malka, in the beginning of the desire of the king, Glif Glifu Bitihiru Ilah. He engraved gravings in the supernal light. So the Some of Kabbalah want to say that the engraved gravings is he created a vacuum, he engraved a graving, and this light was removed. Make a copy of it. Spirituality is not greater than physicality in the ultimate sense.
Physicality could even be greater than.
Yeah, it could be. A person who works his whole life on self-enhancement and he reaches very deep spiritual levels on his own doesn't become closer to Ein Sof as a result of that, versus the person who does the mitzvah in a very physical way connects to Ein Sof.
Because
the mitzvah is the pre-tzim.
So
the mitzvah is the pre-tzim
really
some reality.
Close to the Eivishtha. He's trying to do all the tukum of the mitzvah, and that'll get him closer to the Eivishtha than somebody who's working on.
But that's only one part of the cake. The Alter Rebbe and Tanya before said a whole thing about kavana, the gatvin. Yeah,
I understand, but you say that's
trying to clarify. Avada Atzilus is higher than Asiya. Avodah Keser is higher than a vulgar human being.
10 is closer to a billion than 1.
Right.
10 is closer to a billion. It's infinite. It's not a billion. That's the point.
Ah. When you're talking with Avada, there's a certain refinement, and there's a certain. But when you're talking about an ultimate reality, when you're dealing with Eir Insof, what Chassidus is saying, you have to realize that the gap between Eir Insof and Keser is like the gap between Eir Insof and a pebble.
He's not trying to say from the way you worded it, he was dealing with a certain claim that others are saying. He's not, indeed, in his model, the pebble would be just as distant to Ein Sof as Keser. But he's trying to express the Ein Ered, the Dilug. The Dilug element, in contrast, because of the contrast, you wouldn't see it, because it's exactly the same. You wouldn't see it because a pebble is a pebble. You wouldn't see that dilute by a pebble to Ein Sof as Keser to Ein Sof. So he has to pick things that have
but
a different.
I see what you're saying, but that's how he's interpreted.
But
that's how he's interpreted, but Feirish.
But that's why I'm saying
the truth is, in Tanya, you could say he had the same shot.
I thought that's what
the Alter Rebbe uses the same terms like the Ramak.
Yeah.
He says that Lagabi Bli Gvul, even a million and a trillion, is not closer than one Lagabi a million. So it's like the words of the Ramak.
The
Maase is that in Likud Teir Hashirim, Alter Rebbe brings the same marshal. And he says, Vahainu, that Lagabi Bli Gvul Echad and Alfei Alafim are the same, are Beshava, Kemavur and Tanya, in Perek Mumchas.
If Tanya is saying that, so you can say the Ramak is saying that too. But it's not what he's trying to. It's not his.
But it's not only that. That's just one example. There's various sources in the Ramak where he explains how Keser has a certain dimion. Hishtavos is his word with Ein Sof. This is just an expression where it's brought out. But it's a whole shit of the Ramak. It's not just one expression. Rebbe Rashab has two long maimarim on this, explaining the difference.
It seems that he's saying that there is tachlis some level of closeness that Keser has, much closer or whatever it is than the level. And but that's assuming then that there's a relationship, there's a real relationship between Keser.
Because Keser is an expression, it's self-expression.
And like the Arizal, there's no relationship. What I'm trying to say, I understand that, is that it's very subtle, but ultimately, when you're saying closeness, illa, that's what I was trying to say with it. That obviously the illa, the primary cause, is the illa of post-Simpson, right? The things like is the illa, but it's a different kind of the all is not necessary. So the same thing, when we're talking about infinite, even with an infinite, there is the hishtavus could be in its not in its infinite, but in the infinite nature of something, which means that in infinite is level. The number one, counting numbers. How many counting numbers are there? Infinite, right?
Yeah.
Infinite. But nevertheless, one to infinite numbers is not the same as one to
infinity.
Infinity.
Right.
So there's a certain hishtavus in its infinity aspect, not so much in its mahus. You know, there's differences. Sometimes you can claim a relationship between something in its in an infinite nature of it, which means I can say there is at some point, but not closeness and mahus. You know, that it's not necessary that's what he's just not dealing with that world. That's why I wouldn't say that Rizal is necessarily a contradiction to the Ramak, but it's a world they're not. He's not touching that. He's not.
You're saying an interesting nakuda. You're saying that the Arizal is talking about a certain dimyan between Keser and Ein Sof that the Arizal would also agree on. And the Arizal is just discovering a different realm in which there's no dimyan b'chlal.
He's starting to elaborate or take apart the nature at the next dimension, that which the Ramak went to here, let's say, in describing things in a tangible way.
That's Geschmack to say.
asking whether we don't get a sense that even from the Kisrari that he somehow says that this is not.
No, he never.
Like my Rebbe.
No, no.
This is not. It's just. We're now ready to elaborate.
It's good how you're putting it, not as an argument, but they're dealing with two realms.
He wasn't dealing with that. He wasn't ready to put it.
He was
down,
dealing with those madrigas in which Kesser does reflect the Ein Sof, and the reason was explaining to you that there's maybe certain inyanim, but there's other inyanim where.
Big mathematicians would know the answer to something, but they wouldn't know the formula. Ramak necessarily wasn't. It wasn't ready yet to elaborate or to get a grasp.
What do you want to ask?
In that dimension.
You start here with Amshin of Rebbe.
How do I come to connect with Hashem through the Ramak and through the Rebbe? Or what does the mitzvah do? Because I'm going to bring out this in the morning. What happens to the Ramak? What happens to the Rebbe? Where do they come to differentiate in Vegas?
According to both of them, when you do a mitzvah, you become davar gudeibush. There's no shaila about it.
Just the remark is through chachatim.
Well, it would be the avada through a mitzvah. There's no shaila about that. But through the ramak, when your mitzvah reaches its highest level.
What is your mind mitzvah reaches its highest level?
When you take your olul. And you bring it up the ladder. Up the ladder,
how
all the way.
Through Chachma.
Through Avodah. Through working on yourself.
But it's two different Avodahs according to the Rakat for a reason, no? According to the Rakat, it's Avodah of just thinking to Hashem.
No. Also mitzvahs. Everybody holds Torah and mitzvahs when the Ramak doesn't say you're part of a mitzvahs.
Okay.
The Rambam also question is, what's the significance of a mitzvah? But the bottom line is, when you elevate your mitzvah to the highest level, there's a certain kinship, a certain kiruv between your mitzvah on its highest level and Ein Sof.
According to
the Arizal, the kesher begins when you transcend yourself, and the farlir sich, when you go out of your mitzvah. If I take mitzvahs to my highest level, and another person does a mitzvah with even gashmi, sometimes the gashmis can be higher than the ruchnis.
He's taking himself out of his own mitzvahs.
Because he's being mekayim the ebrus tzivah.
Now it makes sense. It's almost like it's in the center of gravity. It's the last shot when tzaddikim die, and they lose themselves because he takes himself out of his own mitzvahs.
Also, it takes himself out of his mitzvahs. The question is, what means taking out of yourself your mitzvahs? So, a habitel, a whole self nullification against. Mit the zich kannst du nicht der Gleichen leberste. Even with the hechste zich, you're not going to reach it because the hechste zich is through a tzimtzum. What's that tzimtzum? That Ein Sof was totally concealed, removed, so to speak, and a new Eid emerged. So the highest level of that Eid, the lowest level that comes of that Eid, it's the same. It's both not him. It's the same. The highest level, the lowest level. The Keser, Nasi, it's Mamish B'Shava. It's both not he. For the Ramak, what says it's both not he? Keser is he. It's not Mamish he, but it's an expression of he, and it's a greater expression of he. Avada, the disparity between Kesed and Ein Sof is greater. The disparity between the ultimate He and the expressed He is greater than the disparity between the higher expressed He and the lower expressed He. Between Kesed and Asiyah. But Kesed is still closer. Kesed we're using as a term for the highest Ruchnis, whatever you want to call it. This context is not in the game Amr the Chalukim Madregas. You want to know the Vart. The question is, can you find yourself in Hashem or must you lose yourself in Hashem?
Like
the Ramak, you can find yourself in Hashem. Avada, not your regular self.
So what's Nefesh Chelikah Kaim Mima? I am a shtickle of Hashem.
That's a good question, but it says in Perek Beis that Pshat Chelek Alakam Imal means Chachma. It comes from Chachma.
So it extends back to Shibbutz Ramah.
He discusses it right in the Perek. He discusses, doesn't discuss this, he discusses Hu Amada V'Hu Yedeya, which is what he said when he gave Chelek Alakam Imal. Even when you say Chelek Alakam Imal, you have to know what it means. What does it mean, Chelek? Why is it a part? Hashem has parts.
And that's also
you have to understand what it means.
My Hashem is also through.
Yeah, yeah. That's the word. The nefesh is after the tzimtzum.
He says it here.
You say, he says the neshama is harbali gvul. No, he's not, he knows what he wrote in Perek Beis. In Emmer. I'll take a look.
In Emmer, yeah.
I'll take a look. Pashtos, the master of everything. Adoin? Huh?
How can we prove it through logic?
That what? That Hashem exists?
It exists all over the world.
You want to prove through logic that Hashem not only exists, but He exists all over? Sei gesund. A good tenach. Time itself is a result of the Big Bang. Exist.
But what I like is the concept that time is also part of that, which in the Mamarim, it's also done with
Pashtus.
For the thinkers of the time, it wasn't the Pashtus.
Right.
I saw one of the Mamarim from one of the things in the Mach. Kiyadua, the Zman is an immigrant. Kiyadua.
Zmanu Mechudish Yeshmeyayin. That's what Pashta's the answer to is Shaila Yesh Meyayin. Yesh Meyayin doesn't necessarily mean Yesh Meyayin in the Taich that you can't find its properties in its source. Yesh Meyayin could mean that nothing of it existed before. In the sense that it's a new creation, in the literal sense. There's Yesh Meyayin when you dissect it as it negates Ilava Olu Mamash. That there's nothing of the yesh to be found in the source. But I'm saying, even according to what the Ramak calls it, ilu v'olol, you can still call it yesh meayin in the sense that he, the world he created knew, anew.
But that you have to say the
result too. For sure, yeshmi, and problem. No, he asked, L'chura Yeshmeyayin means that you can't find the properties of the created one in the Creator, versus Ilav Allah, that you can identify the properties in the antecedent. But L'chura, according to the Ramak, he calls Keser Allah and Ein Sof Ilah, so it's not Yeshmeyayin.
I didn't even hear that expression. The expression was that he was a relativistic kind of thing. He says this, there's a greater gap.
I hear you. You can also say maybe that Yeshmeyayin is the physical from the spiritual. Physical from the spiritual is... Well, you can't identify the properties of physicality within spirituality. It's only quantitative. No, real spirituality, not just energy. Not just Einsteinian energy. Transcendental spirituality.
One of the consequences of something of something truly Beinarei, when you start dealing with the muscle with the numbers, Beinarei would then mean what the symptom. The symptom of Beinarei, it means that the world as it is, that there's infinite possibility, the world could have been, is one of infinite possibilities. But otherwise, if it wasn't, then there is an error. If in some way the world had to be the way it is now, then it's an error.
Right.
The nature of the vain error was truly infinite. The dilug means that it could have been dilug in infinite ways.
Right.
Whereas in the dilug of Allah, that's not the same.
The illah has to reflect itself in a certain type or types of alulim. In its makeup, but in its nature.
like, suppose something is finite with an infinite quality. So you could, does it have to be explicit? That's what I mean. Something could be, if something could be its ilah.
You're saying the Ein Sof can be an ilah of the Keser in a certain inyan, even though in a certain inyan it's be'ein areich mamash.
This one that you talk about, and this whatever extent we could use words to try and describe something, I can see how they're using certain metaphors.
It's good what you're saying, that you don't have to create an argument. You can create, they dealt with two issues. He was dealing with one inyan in Keser, and Arizal was
like
revealing another inyan in Keser.
They're both operating in the same understanding, but in how would you call it? Namala, that inyan was studied by the Mark. You can't say he was teaching it. Perhaps that was not his area that he was teaching.
I just want to ask a question which is not directly related to what you're talking about. This is Yehuda Sambik, you know Yehuda Sambik. He recommended that I speak to you about it. So it's the first time I'm here, first time. But if you're in the middle of the discussion, I don't wish to interrupt, so perhaps I can come back.
Whenever you want, or if you can come back next week, or you can call me if you want.
If possible. When is a good time to reach you? Because I do have someone that's giving me your home number.
In the afternoons.
Afternoons, what time is it?
5 to 7.
5 to 7. Between 5 and 7. Okay then, so.
No problem. Okay.
Next week, same time?
8:30. 8:30 Sunday, yeah. Have a good night. Have a good week. Welcome. I see what you're saying. There's two inyanim.
To order additional MP3 CDs, call Heichal Menachem at 718-633-1076 or visit us at www.chassidus.com. That is CHASSIDUS.com.